want to first start by thanking all of the co-authors, especially Dr. O'Reilly, in the hydrogeology department at Illinois State University. We partnered, and along with our students, trying to tackle this watershed project. This project is funded by NREC. You heard about that previously, and by the Illinois EPA. So our objectives are to determine if a mass adoption of cover crops on a watershed scale could impact the distribution and concentration and form of soil inorganic nitrogen. And secondly, we want to see if cover crop adoption across this massive watershed, well, not massive, but mass adoption, could translate to some water quality. The motivation for the study is simply in the last 15, 20 years, we've been, if you've been following the cover crop literature, you would notice that most of the studies are done on plots that are less than maybe 1.5 acres. I also have some of those plots. And within those plots, things are very controlled. You're probably dealing with one farmer if you are on doing on-farm research. And there are some certain things that we've been seeing, such as cover crops are reducing the nitrate that's leaving the tile by 20 to 40%. Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Missouri. Okay, we're also seeing that cover crops are affecting the concentration of inorganic nitrogen in the spring, depending on the CNN ratio of those cover crops. So, for instance, you have a cereal rye that has a higher CNN ratio, it degrades, decomposes slower, so you have more nitrogen in the first 2 feet of soil compared to if you had a radish that winter killed and decomposed for a longer period of time with a lower CNN ratio, and you have a higher percentage of nitrate. So we know those things on a plot and small field scale. We want to see if they would translate to a watershed scale, because I don't believe that we would meet the reduction and drop the baseline from the, what is it, 404 million pounds of nitrate in that we are currently discharging to the Mississippi River Basin without looking at this practice on a watershed scale. Okay, so let me just introduce the watershed. The study site was the Lake Bloomington Watershed in Towanda, Illinois. We call it the Village of Towanda. It is the drinking water source for over 80,000 people now. The history of this, the water quality in this watershed is that annually it's impaired for nitrates, sediments, and also phosphate. We're going to focus on nitrates. So in 2016, the control watershed, which is about 266 hectares, 0% cover crop there. And basically, if you look at the cropping system within this year, it was almost even corn and soybean, with 44% corn being planted and 56% soybean. And the average nitrogen rate, and this is the mass in kilograms of nitrogen applied in the entire watershed, divided by the hectares of the watershed, is about 95 kilograms of N per hectare. And then if you look at the cover crop watershed, we cover cropped about 50%, close to 50% of that watershed, to see if we can generate some type of response in water quality. In that watershed, it was dominated by soybeans this particular year, 68% versus 32% corn planted. At a lower average rate of nitrogen. It's the larger watershed. And so it was only 54 kilograms of N per hectare being applied. So after identifying these two watersheds, we had to work with farmers within the treatment watershed to beg them to allow us to use their land for the fallow period and try to fly in cover crops. So when we did this, we were able to visit farmers. I sat in numerous of pole barns negotiating, trying to get farmers to allow me to use their fields to do this study, and they were gracious. And so they allowed us to fly on about 48% of that watershed with with cover crops, and we'll talk more about that. So this is kind of what it looks like from the area, from an aerial photo of the Chase aerial, who actually flew on the cover crops. It was generous enough to give me a couple photos, and you can kind of see within the corn some of the green here, cover crops growing, and you see more here in the soybean residue. It shows up a little bit better. This is an up-close look at some of the growth in the watershed, some of the early growth and late fall growth. We used cereal rye and radish before soybeans, and then radish oats before corn, and it was amazing. I presented to the farmers information on the top five cover crops in the region that we would have the greatest potential to actually get some growth. They took that information and somehow went to a coffee shop or something, sat in the pickup truck in a circle. I don't know what they did. And they all came up with the fact that they wanted radish oats with a lower CNN ratio potential before corn to get the nitrogen back quicker. And then cereal rye radish, you can go ahead and put that before soybeans. That's what they said. And then all of the farmers came up with the same thought pattern. And that shows you how intelligent farmers are. Because that's the same thing I would have recommended. So to understand the biomass and uptake of the cover crop across the watershed, we went out and we took in two different times in the fall and spring and took biomass samples, just above ground biomass samples, and then dried it down and measured total uptake using dry combustion of the dried material. We also took soil samples in the spring, about a week or two after when the cover crops were terminated. And all of the cover crops were not terminated at the same time because the farmers didn't want me to come in and hire someone to terminate. Of course, they wanted to terminate themselves, and I incentivized them for doing that. And so it was really a farmer-led project. I was a visitor, and they let me know that often. We did some grid sampling across both watersheds to determine what's happening in the soil in the first 2 feet as far as the form of nitrogen, whether it was nitrate or ammonium, and does that correlate back to the type of cover crops that was there. At the sampling points, from a model, we determined the sampling points of where water was leaving those watersheds, and we instrumentated that point. Prior to February 2016, we had to take grab samples every 2 weeks and analyze samples and estimate flow based on the channel profile and the depth or head of the water in the channel. And so we were able to do this very effectively, bring it back to the lab and measure nitrate and ammonia. So this is just the fly-on as applied pattern. You can see that most of the watershed is covered with cereal rye radish and then some radish oats. Okay. So first of all, remember this pattern of cereal rye. It's going to keep showing up. So when you think about biomass production from the cover crop growth, we had an average for cereal rye radish mixture of 1,682 kilograms per hectare, and then for the radish, 460, significantly lower than the cereal rye rad. One interesting note is that from the fall to the spring, there was about a 1,250 gain in biomass of kilograms per hectare. And that's because the cereal rye can withstand the winter temperatures and grow in both fall and spring. There's also two opportunities where that cereal rye could scavenge nitrogen from the soil profile. When you're working on a watershed scale, you really learn a lot. And so there was some herbicide interference of cover crop growth. We're collecting data, as much data as we could, to kind of optimize our chances of getting good growth across the total watershed. But then here, there was some herbicides that affected that 60 acres. And so we live and learn from that. Uptake-wise, you can still see where the cereal rye was planted You got very good uptake, 58 kilograms per hectare. That's something that I've been seeing in all the talks since I've been here, something around 38 to 58 to 60 kilograms per hectare for cereal rye rad. And then for radish oats, 21 kilograms per hectare, significantly lower compared. This is another interesting note that from the fall to the spring, as biomass increased, the kilograms per hectare sequestered in the cover crop also increased. So when you think about what's happening in the soil, so this is for the total 2 foot, 60 centimeter profile, we saw that there's significantly more nitrogen in the soil with radish oats compared to among treatments, but was not significantly different from the control watershed that in the same depth that had no cover crops. Here's a look at just the percentage. You can look at the percentages of nitrate versus ammonium in the first foot of soil, and you can see significantly more nitrate there for radish oats compared to the other treatments. And then next came the non-cover crop areas of the two watersheds, and then cereal rye was significantly lower. And then when you look at ammonium, cereal rye was significantly higher than radish oats, but the same as the control watershed, and but significantly higher than the non-cover crops within the treatment watershed. And that trend persisted at the lower depth. And this is what it looks like spatially. You can see, basically, based on the cover crop that you choose, you can almost dictate what form of nitrogen would be there early spring. And so this is where the cereal rye was, this is where the radish oats were, and the non-cover crop areas. And that persisted for nitrate. So where you had radish oats, you had more nitrate. Where you had cereal rye, you had more ammonium because of the decomposition rates were slower. And that persisted for both depths. And so here's the water quality data. And so what we have on the first y-axis is the flow weighted concentration and then discharge in millimeters. Discharge patterns were about the same. We did see right here where the cover crops were growing, 2015-16, some reductions in nitrate flow weighted concentrations, which gives us a thought that there's potential. If we get greater growth, greater coverage, there's potential for there to be an impact. However, one thing that we learned is that although we had pretty good uptake for the cereal rye and for the cover crops implemented, we did not affect the water quality. So about 50% of what was applied in the treatment watershed was lost through the tile, but only 25% of what was applied in the control watershed was lost through the tile. Now, I know there's a great difference between the two, but what this shows is that we can't tackle reductions of nitrate on a watershed scale by using one practice. So cover crops were doing their job, just as we've seen over the last 15 years on a plot and field scale, but there were some non-cover crop processes probably going on outside of the cover crop areas that contribute to nitrate loading, such as just the soils being greater than 3% organic matter. On a field scale, we saw that the losses from a zero control was just as high as losses from where 200 units of nitrogen were applied. So, and if also we had a warm, very warm winter. And so that mineralization rate is higher, nitrification is higher, so you get more nitrate, even where you don't have any nitrogen applied. We also thought that it was possible to get mass adoption if you approach the farmer in the correct way, and if we can get that, what was it, I think it's $85 million or so. What was the amount of money it took to?
$858
million. If we can get a portion of that, we can incentivize farmers, and I think that they would take a look at trying to work together as a team in the watershed and get very good coverage to try to make an impact. But cover crops is not the number one, it's the number one effective practice, but it can't do it alone. And so that's what we learned so far, and we're going to continue this for another year. So thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Any questions? Go ahead.
treatment watershed, about 20% had fallen in. So when I showed the cover crop picture with looked like strip till through it, they were actually strip tilling and also applying anhydrous at the same time. That's the thought. So a very small percentage, which was about 120 acres. We would have saw greater reductions, possibly.
Water quality,
we would have saw greater reductions probably of what was getting to the tile because we would have had that average of 58 or so kilograms per hectare uptake. It could have been, but the radish oats portion of the watershed was less than 20%. So next year it's going to flip flop and we'll be in the tail. Not yet. So we're working on getting yield data and also nitrogen uptake data so that we can get a more complete nitrogen balance and have more detailed results to come from the watershed. So that's another way I'm going to have to find some money to incentivize and see if we can get some data from them, maybe actually their yield data, and we can do some interpolations with a mapping software.
There's a lot of stuff stored down there that we don't account for in the years.